Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order so we don't get a reputation for starting late all the time here. So we have quite a few people missing because there's a lot to cover today. And our basic objective is to try to learn about the proposed and passed federal legislation and how it might impact what we're trying to do here, and especially as the budget comes forward and then the forecast later. So got a good group of folks to lead us through that, and we're going to start out first with Paul Beck from Minnesota Housing Partnership. Thank you, and welcome back to the committee.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was asked to provide some context and overview for some of the presentations to follow, where communities will be in the state agency will be speaking about how they specifically plan to respond to some of the federal resources available now or prospective. And so what I'll do in my presentation is to briefly look at a couple of the housing bills passed last year, or the economic stimulus bills, and then provide an overview of what Congress, at least to date, is looking at with the stimulus package to come, which is being debated today in Congress. So, and then I should say also that as we talk about federal resources and federal resources to Minnesota, we're talking about some pretty large dollar amounts. Of course, the $700 billion bailout package sort of set the frame for how to the scale of things to come. But we should keep in mind that the magnitude of those resources relative to the resources available to the diminishing resources available to the state. And as an example of that, on average, among various housing programs, about $500 million of resources come to Minnesota annually for a range of housing programs, from Section 8 to public housing, the equity value of tax credits, and rural development programs. And that's compared, of course, to the $50, $60 million of appropriations annually the legislature is able to make available. But that should also be seen in the level of need across the state, in how we've been unable to really make a dent into some of the housing goals set some years ago to address the hundreds of thousands of households paying over 30% of income for housing, the rising homelessness, and also the just the large magnitude of the numbers of housing units needed to meet the goals laid out by the Metropolitan Council for communities and their housing plans. And in just a real rough ballpark, would require double the amount of federal and state resources available now, available in the last year or two. So even though the amount of federal resources coming to the state is large, it's not making a sizable dent in some of the goals that were laid out before. And those were laid out before, of course, we had the impact of the foreclosure crisis and then also the economic crisis that we've entered into. So the dollars available from the state are very critical to fill in around what the federal government is making available. I'll first start talking again briefly about the HERA Act, which was passed end of July last year, which is the Housing and Economic Recovery Act. And that was really a significant set of housing initiatives and programs approved by Congress. And it's said to be the largest housing package passed out of the federal government in over a 20-year period. Now, as we talk about that, a number of the initiatives, good initiatives at least thought of at the time, just last year, are really not able to do what was thought because of the severe financial crisis we're in. And a number of the new initiatives that are being thought of in the economic stimulus package, too, are intended to address some of those failings. But first and foremost, as part of that, what I'll say is HERA for the Housing and Economic Recovery Act, is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, NSP. And that's the major cash resource that's coming out of the federal government to Minnesota and other states there to address foreclosures. And Minnesota has received a commitment from the federal government on a formula basis of $58 million. And 38 of that is to our state housing agency to be distributed. And I believe tomorrow is the deadline for the housing agency to receive proposals from communities that are in its areas of highest need in with facing foreclosure. So those proposals will be coming in tomorrow. So the agency can't yet say specifically how its resources will be used, but just the process is underway. And there are five local jurisdictions that are also distributing those resources. And as I mentioned, the resources themselves are to address foreclosures, vacant properties, and there's a fairly defined set of five activities that can be used for those resources. And they're intended to benefit households whose incomes are 120% of median and below for all of the resources, but 25% of the Neighborhood Stabilization Program funding is to benefit people whose incomes are at 50% of median and below. But again, that's primarily intended to get at foreclosed properties in areas that are facing highest levels of foreclosures. But I just then want to briefly cover some of the other parts of HERA because, as I mentioned, they'll come up again with the new proposed legislation. There were a number of changes to the low-income housing tax credit program, which is the main way of bringing private capital in to fund affordable rental housing. It expanded the amount of tax credits that are available to states. That's on a per capita basis, about 10% more tax credit resources is available to Minnesota in 2008 and 2009. And also, there were a number of rule changes to allow more tax credits to go into specific properties. Unfortunately, as good as those changes were, we had a collapse of the tax credit market, which at this point is making it extremely hard for Minnesota Housing and other agencies that administer the tax credit program and their developers to bring in resources. So when we look at the new changes coming up, there's yet another round of proposals to help make that tax credit program more useful. Also, for tax-exempt bonding, the revenue bonding, there was increased bonding authority for states and other local governments, and more flexible rules that allow the bond to be more valuable. And I don't know if the state agency is going to testify on it, but they're also that although those were good changes, that because of what's happened more recently and the changing financial markets, the state is very hard-pressed to be able to raise capital through the sale of its revenue bond. So we have a situation where in this last year's legislation there were significant changes to encourage those those are really the two major sources, one for rental housing and the other for home ownership, primarily, of bringing in private capital for affordable housing. And HERA helped, well, address those, but the market failings are now requiring further changes to try to get things back on track. There were two new sources of capital for development created by the federal government through the HERA legislation. One is called the Capital Magnet Fund, which is to put new resources into community development financial institutions for community development lending. And the other was creating a new National Housing Trust Fund, which is to provide resources to create housing affordable to extremely low-income households. Great pieces of legislation, but they were set up to be funded by the business earnings of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I think you're aware that those institutions themselves have run into significant problems. So at this point, it's a question whether any money for some time will come into these new financial sources created through HERA. There were some changes to the Section 8, the federal rent subsidy program, that allow it to be better used in conjunction with projects like supportive housing. And I think those were good rule changes that allow the better meshing of rent subsidies with project development, and again, helping the state address its long-term homelessness needs. But the long-term value of those rule changes depends on the production of rental housing and some other things, which are really at question now. And then there were efforts to try to help homeowners and to move the housing supply that's sort of bottlenecked. And one is the Hope for Homeowners program, which was to get people who are now households who are have homes and mortgages, but unable to pay, to reduce, to voluntarily have the banks reduce the value of the principal amount of their loan, and then to have those loans insured by the FHA, and really try to stabilize. At the point, the goal was 400,000 homeowners across the state that were, or across the country, that were in trouble. Unfortunately, the voluntary process didn't work, so very few loans have closed under Hope for Homeowners. And then the last thing I'll mention about HERA is the tax credit program to put 10% up to $7,500 to first-time home buyers, again, to help try to move some of the inventory sitting out there. But as you may have read, that program also has not functioned well in terms of, because of the difficulty of people having buying homes, having the credit enabled to buy homes, and also that it was really not all that good a deal, because that $7,500 tax credit had to be paid back over 15 years, basically a 0% interest loan coming from the federal government, and you didn't get it to help you with a down payment. It was kind of on a reimbursement basis. So I hope to leave you with the thought and the message that the federal government really grappled with significant and severe housing problems that the nation was facing last year, passed a huge piece of legislation to get at that, that is having, at best, very mixed results in terms of actually getting anything done. And so that, in part, leads us to what they're going to try to do this year. Now, and less time is the other major piece of legislation that has a piece of housing to it. Well, it was really brought into being because of a financial mess that was triggered by the foreclosure crisis, the housing crisis, and that's the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act. of 2008, also called ESA or bailout bill or Bush's folly. Just many, many ways of talking about that. But it was a way of trying to shore up and secure the financial industry, and that $700 billion, $350 billion of the, kind of use the big numbers here, billion of that was released, and earlier it required Congress to look at the plans before the final $350 billion would be released. And with the Obama administration just got the go-ahead from Congress to use that $350 billion. And again, how is that going to help people in, who have problems paying their mortgages or dealing with foreclosures? That was a part of the original legislation passed last year, which is to direct federal agencies to develop plans to minimize foreclosures and to work with mortgage servicers to get the modification to help people that are facing problems with foreclosures. And again, that's something that was an intent of Congress and that really didn't go anywhere. And so it was basically, as the Obama administration and Congress look at what's happening with this remaining $350 billion, they want to come back to that, at least that original intent of Congress. So that is what I wanted to do for you in terms of sort of lay out what happened last year, that now, as I'll turn to this handout, that Congress and the White House will be looking at with new legislation to make up for past failings and mixed results in terms of trying to get the economy going again and address a number of our housing and other problems facing the country. With that, just so people have, this is the handout I'll be referring to for the next few minutes. And let me say that this was put together pretty quickly, but I believe it's accurate in terms of, as of last weekend, a couple days ago, where Congress stood and its proposals to move the economy forward, or the housing portion of it, I say. Of course, there's many, many other things that the Congress is looking at in the stimulus package, but these are the housing portions. And also then the Obama initiative, and initiative is really too strong a word. It's really part of the rhetoric coming out of the Obama administration that addresses housing and the housing component of economic stimulus. This is organized to, as best as I could anyway, to look at a number of these packages or proposals that are going through Congress and how they might meet some of the things that we need to have happen here in Minnesota, which are on the left-hand column, addressing homelessness or addressing foreclosures, preserving housing affordability, fixed public housing, etc. So that's, I felt that would be of value for the discussion and presentation. I can say, also again, we're dealing with big numbers, and the big numbers coming out of the House are bigger than the big numbers coming out of the Senate at this time. For the programs of housing that go through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, that the House of Representatives is proposing $16.3 billion of its $550 billion in spending recommendations for housing programs of HUD, Housing and Urban Development. The Senate is proposing $13.1 billion of $365 billion of its spending recommendations for HUD. And as we look at this in these huge numbers and try to think about what might happen in Minnesota, and of course it might underscore because a lot of this are competitive programs that we and everybody else will be applying for. But basically, when you see $1 billion, that translates into $15 million for Minnesota if we got about our proportionate share. And just as an example of that, for instance, the last year's NSP program, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, was $3.92 billion. And if you go, you know, to, on that scale, 15 million for every billion, then you come pretty close to the 58 million that Minnesota got. So in terms of now addressing foreclosures, so first with the Obama administration, a lot of the text here is on what, you know, sort of the mortgage or getting bankruptcy judges to deal with mortgages, and also how it might handle the TARP funding, the Troubled Assets Recovery Program. And again, this is early statements from the Obama administration, and but just to give you an indication of the type of direction the administration might go. Of course, the House and the Senate proposals are much more specific. And at the top of the list on either, again, with the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, it's more money again. Again, last year we got nationally $3.92 billion stabilization. Here we're looking at, from the House, is $4.19 billion, and the Senate, $2.2 billion. I should say that last year, this money went out to states on a formula that was developed by HUD. These proposals, House in particular, and I believe the Senate also, are competitive proposals. That's going to require folks in Minnesota in the state housing agency to apply for these funds if Congress is, and if it becomes enacted as it's now proposed here. I think what is So there's much less assurance that $15 million based on $1 billion is coming to Minnesota, but the track record we have in Minnesota is pretty good for competitive grants. There are a couple of other, the next on the House side, you see a couple of things for TARP, and that was in a separate bill, and that's not expected to pass because there's no Senate companion, but it does show the indication of what the House hopes to see with TARP, and it's expected that the Obama administration has a direct treasury, and the use of those, that $350 billion, would be sort of following through on these objectives. So that's addressing foreclosures. And the next step, turning the page here, is preserving affordable housing affordability, rehabbing homes, creating green housing. And again, the House has substantially more resources for that purpose, and also a good level of resources directed for Native American housing that's not on the Senate side. So just to make you aware of those differences, and again, it's unclear, most of these resources come through competitive programs and what can be done. There's much greater concurrence on public housing, and the nation and federal government has long neglected the nation's public housing supply. In Minnesota, we have some 20,000 apartments that are slowly wasting away because there's been inadequate money available from the federal government to shore it up. The state in 2007 did step up to help keep things afloat while hopefully this will pass. But both the Senate and the House are looking at putting $5 billion nationally into public housing capital, which would be a great thing for the state. On the formula I gave, it would be $75 million coming to Minnesota to shore up public housing. Now, I think the Minneapolis Public Housing Agency alone identified something like $200 million in repair. So I don't want people to think that our problems are over, but this is much better than the federal government's done for years and years for public housing. Producing affordable housing money into the HOME program, which is here administered by our state housing agency as well as some local government, money for in the house side for community development block grants. These aren't resources that are restricted to housing, but could well be used for housing and certainly for community development. Some additional tax credits would be made available. Let's see. I think those are the main things I wanted to say. Helping people buy homes. And so one of the major things that both the House and Senate are looking at is that $7,500 tax credit. I mentioned that was part of the HERA legislation that really didn't go anywhere, and it was a repayable 0% loan. So now both the House and Senate are proposed that for a couple years' time anyway, that $7,500 just become an outright grant if you stay in the home a number of years. Hopefully that will help move some of the inventory and help first-time home buyers. And there are some bonding things in here that would help sort of move forward some of the bonding, and it's unclear exactly what they mean for housing bonds. And maybe the state agency people have more insights into that. I should say that the House is doing much more for rural housing than the Senate side. There's money in there to help move rural housing that the Senate does not have. And then in conclusion, our last point here is the resources that are really needed in, to keep people out of homelessness, out of shelters, and if they end up in shelters, to make sure that the shelters have better resources. So again, it doesn't meet the level of need, but it's great that both the House and the Senate are proposing additional billions of dollars to help people to fund shelters, to provide that type of emergency assistance that's critically needed in Minnesota and other states. So again, this is before Congress. It's the intent of the Obama administration, I believe, congressional leaders, to have this all wrapped up by mid-February. February 18th is the latest day I heard. And also, you know, so it provides some significant resources that over the next year's time would be coming to Minnesota. That I understand that they're really looking for projects and ways to spend money that some 75% of dollars would be expended by the end of 2010, I believe is the Obama administration's intent. So for us in Minnesota and the legislature, I think it's incumbent upon us to pay close attention to how these bills go through Congress and think about how we can best leverage these federal resources in a manner that stretches the very scarce resources of the state, but maximizes what can be done to address foreclosures and help people in extreme need to stay in homes, to keep our shelter system working, and to help move some of the inventory of homes out there sitting vacant.
Well, thank you for that very thorough review. I'm just going to take a moment to call the meeting officially to order since we have a quorum, although I'll note that all of our Republican colleagues have apparently left, perhaps to speak with the governor, I don't know. But anyway, we're going to go forward. Are there questions? That was very thorough again, Ms. Holder. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to comment, recognize the fact that, you know, commenting on federal money that hasn't even been, you know, assured yet is kind of a nebulous thing. But the question I have refers to looking at the green housing and the rehab situation. I'm looking in the Senate proposal and seeing tax credits, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the efficacy of tax credits when people are going to have trouble paying their taxes anyway. How are we going to get or provide some means for people to start using some of the green technologies besides weatherization? I see weatherization listed in a couple of other places as well, but, you know, to help people address heating bills into the future. And, you know, granted, I know you can't say much about what are the federal government, state, and house doing, but I'm wondering what your recommendations are or thoughts that you have for us here at the state, recognizing that a tax credit may not be that helpful. Where can we be helpful in getting those technologies incorporated in our housing, public housing, and also low and middle income housing assistance? So I would just like to know what you think about that.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I just believe that the direct investment of funds at this point in our economy is a much better way to go than a tax credit approach. That said, if we end up with tax credits, then there's not only on these housing proposals, but tremendous investment coming to the federal through the federal government to spur all sorts of alternative energy methods in that. So I believe that there will be a new economy on that focus spring forward. So there could well be a number of businesses that could be using tax credits for this. But again, I just believe in terms of helping people who have a hard time with their heating bills, putting the money out through the programs we have now to make those grants and for weatherization and that is a much better way to go. And also we do have, following me, representatives from the city and state agency that could talk about the weatherization programs they have and how they're looking at these too.
Thank you. Just along that line, is there anything in here that specifically addresses the issue of healthy, you know, making housing healthier? Some of the issues that we've talked about in the work group over the last few months.
I am certainly our state agency's approach to green housing and the new rules that have been developed for investments in new rental construction, homeownership construction, and I believe rehab have been developed also, takes that comprehensive approach, which looks at the elements of what makes a home healthier. And so to the extent that the resources come through our state agency, I believe that those components will be linked in. But I'm not aware of any specific program, at least that's part of the housing initiative that deals with that.
Okay. Thank you. We'll try to hear that from them and when they come next. Representative Huntley.
Just a comment on that, Madam Chair. There, in the House stimulus bill, there is money for lead abatement.
Thank you.
Which I thought you'd be interested in.
Yes, thank you. This has a lot to do with health. That's exactly right. Thank you very much for doing that. Maybe we'll hear more from our state agency, too. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay, thank you for a very thorough beginning. And next we'll go to our Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Jeanette Blankenship, I believe.
Gino, thank you. I want to thank you again for this chart. It'll be really interesting to see how this might change in the next few days or few weeks. So
today.
Today? Okay.
Thank you.
Maybe we can keep it updated. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeanette Blankenship with Minnesota Housing. Commissioner Bartholomew and Assistant Commissioner Orr had prior commitments. Do you get me today? So I bring their greetings. Schiff covered definitely the content of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan. So I'll try to give our best response to what kind of we're looking at and what may not be in there. The stimulus plan is a combination of both the spending side through appropriations and tax relief. So we're kind of interested in both of those. It's still far too early to really pay attention too much. It's helpful to know what's in there, what's not in there. We try to use our short-term memory on what we're hearing because it's all going to change. Senate is doing a markup today. So the final bill is still very much in process. I want to remind you, as Chip did, that the Housing and Economic Recovery Act back in July, or HERA, was passed, and really it's viewed by legislators and leadership as the housing bill. So you're going to see less housing in this upcoming stimulus bill. And now I'm going to go over a few things that we've been doing to prepare for what may come our way, as well as, again, like I said, a couple of items that we'd like to see in this bill that is not yet included. First of all, regarding the provisions on homelessness, the state's Interagency Council on Homelessness met yesterday and did talk about what's in there and what they should do to prepare should something come their way that they could help direct, and looking at kind of the best strategy to maximize an immediate impact if any money is dedicated for homelessness, which there is at this time. On home dollars, as you heard, those may be included in the bill, and we're already working with our partners to ensure that any projects that are ready to go or pending that were kind of being held off are moved up as quickly as possible. Now, for home, they may the 120-day rule may not apply. It may be a little bit longer, but we still want to make sure that these dollars are used swiftly to get construction projects going, jobs created, keep this moving. So we are committed to making sure things are done as fast as possible, regardless of the timeline.
When you mentioned the 120-day rule, do you want to remind us what part that affects, how that works?
There are certain provisions in, Chair Clark, members of the committee, there are certain provisions in the House and Senate files, or proposed bills, that require certain items to be done within 120 days or 50% done within 120 days. It would take a while to go through all of it, but there are certain items that apply to. Regarding home dollars, we've seen estimates that Minnesota could get $8 to $10 million in that, and that would help us. For example, we have not public housing, but Section 8 housing that gets public investment, need of roof, a heating system that would make it more energy efficient. Those can be done very quickly. Regarding NFC, Chip could cover a lot of that, and we know there may be some additional neighborhood stabilization funds included. The Senate recommendation is about half the House, so again, it's very up in the air how much that might be, $2 billion, $4 billion. And states could get it on a competitive basis, or they may choose to do a criteria formula as they did last time in awarding the funds. As Chip mentioned, tomorrow is our deadline for applications for NFP from eligible applicants, and we anticipate approvals being done at the end of February with our board meeting. So we have a lot to learn still from how the NFP money gets distributed, and we want to make sure we use those lessons learned no matter how much, if any, we get in the stimulus bill. Now I want to cover a couple of the items that we do not see in these bills. First, let you know how we've advocated to include such items. We did meet with Representative or Congressman Elshin a couple weeks ago on the 12th to talk about what could be included. He's on Financial Services Committee, which helped pass through this House bill. Our trade organization, the National Council for State Housing Agencies, or NCSHA, has been advocating on behalf of all housing agencies. And our Minnesota office in Washington has been very responsive to our needs and requests regarding what else could be in here. We've had discussions with Senator Klobuchar's office and have sent her a formal letter, and have been working on set up a meeting with Congressman Paulson, although he just got appointed to financial services and it already passed through the House, so it won't be as useful as it could have been if he were on that committee sooner. So the two items. First, tax credits. We mentioned in our overview to this committee a couple of weeks ago that tax credits are declining in their value. HERA, which was passed in July, included some provisions for tax credits to help make them a little better, including increasing the tax credit allocation and loosening some of the regulations. However, demand has declined. Demand for credits as far as folks building projects has increased, as we mentioned before, that rental vacancies are going down, rents are going up, there's definitely demand for rental housing. However, investors are really in the driver's seat with tax credits. What used to be a 95-cent credit last year on the dollar, you could get 95 cents worth, is now 65 cents. That's a huge gap that we now have to fill in equity for a project. The state has typically used our challenge program, which we talked to you about, for gap financing. Now, as that gap grows larger, we're able to provide gap financing for few and fewer projects. Just nationwide, there's a $5 billion gap for tax credits, which jeopardizes 40,000 rental units. These are credits that have already been awarded, but unless we find investors, we're not going to be able to build the project. In Minnesota, it's about $16 to $30 million that's at jeopardy. 20 projects currently have tax credits allocated to them and yet do not have investors, adequate investors to fund to buy the credits, which jeopardizes at least 500 units here in Minnesota.
Excuse me, could I ask you a question?
Yes.
In terms of some of the loosening of the regulations, are they intended to make this more appealing to those investors? And if so, what would that look like? What kind of changing of the regulations are you talking about?
Chair Clark, members of the committee. The regulations loosened, I don't have specifics on. I know that they were supposed to make them more attractive, but it wasn't anything dramatic. So we can get you more information on that.
Thank you.
Yep. So our solution to helping with this tax credit problem is to use something like TARP or allow, I would say that the best thing we could do to increase the value of tax credits right now would be to have in the stimulus bill some kind of gap financing so that we can invest in these tax credits, which allows us to provide more rental housing. It's both new construction and rehab, and it really gets more jobs created because you are doing rehab, doing new construction for rental housing that's in high demand. Just a side note, the commissioner is down in Worthington today because he's visiting a tax credit project that is currently in early stages of construction, and this is being built because of the Swift expansion there. They actually put in $50,000 of their own money, Swift Corporation did. And with the Talent Fund, we were able to provide some gap financing because, again, the credits weren't worth as much as they could have been. But because of Talent, we were able to provide gap financing, which helps to build these units in areas of high demand. All right, and the other item that we would like to see in the bill but is not included are for tax-exempt housing bonds. Now, in HERA, the tax-exempt bond authority increased for us. Unfortunately, the economy tanked, and we couldn't use these. Our proposal for the inclusion in the stimulus bill would be for the GSEs, such as Fannie and Freddie, to purchase the bonds so that we could use them. Currently, the market is pretty weak right now, so we're looking for a market. Also, the Treasury could use the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, or other resources to purchase these long-term fixed-rate housing bonds at reasonable rates to establish the market and draw on other investors. We really need to stabilize this bond market. Just a little background, Minnesota housing for our mortgage purchases, they reduced from 2007 to 2008. We had $458 billion in 2007, or sorry, million, and only $355 million in 2008. Serving 700 fewer households. And again, we serve 700 fewer households in Minnesota because we did not have adequate bond markets to be able to sell the bonds to have additional financing for those mortgages. So there's still high demand for these high-quality mortgages for first-time homebuyers, but we just don't have enough money to fund them. Those are two main areas not included in this bill, and I can stand for any questions. Representative Clark, I will address the healthy housing. As Representative Huntley mentioned, we have, there is wet abatement language in there for, I'm not sure how much money, but yeah, as well as Chip mentioned, with, for example, with NSP, we do require green community standards, which, as we mentioned in our hearing a couple weeks ago, have a healthy housing component to it, not only in how you build, but what materials you use, as well as where you site to make sure the public health aspect of, you know, being able to walk or bike to places from your home is addressed in how you site affordable housing. So all those pieces are part of our green communities criteria, which we use for new construction, and currently we have under NSP. So I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Just in regard to that and the materials that are being used, does MHFA have a listing of the kinds of materials they're suggesting to be used in some of the housing? And I'm thinking of things, again, like the rug or lack of rugs and floor finishings and so on. Is that is there a listing, or if someone was interested in meeting that criteria, how do they find out what MHFA requires or suggests?
Representative Clark, members, we have the Green Community Standards is probably a 30 to 50 page book of all our standards, which developers use and are guided by. So we can provide that to you. It does include in it a list of the types of materials that are recommended or required as part of Green Communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get that to you.
Any questions from committee members? Okay. So it sounds like, just to review, it sounds like the agency is actively working with our representatives and congresspeople and senator and the office in Washington as well.
Correct.
That's right. I think this committee would be really interested in any kind of update, you know, even if we don't have you on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please kind of keep us informed, because I think we want to be ready. This is a chance for taking advantage of something that might be proposed in the bill. Or, you know, I think the committee members here probably could also be a voice to contacting those same legislators.
Mm-hmm. We'll be sure to do so.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh. Oh, Representative Rosenthal, excuse me.
Sorry.
One moment.
Quick question. You stated that the value of the tax credits has dropped from 95 cents to 65 cents. It seems to me in this market they could drop even further. And have you been thinking along those lines? And has the gap financing that you're providing been enough to stay in the project in Worthington? Could you speak about that project a little bit more?
Ms. Blankenship?
Yes, sorry, Representative Rosenthal. We have made sure that some of our gap financing that we committed in the last challenge round, that's committed. A lot of those projects will be able to move forward. There are a few that still need some gap financing. I think we have 20 projects, as I mentioned, that have the credits but don't have enough investors and or gap financing to make it work. So we are looking at that. There are projects that will be delayed because of this problem. And we do recognize they could fall further, and there, unless there's federal help, I mean, the state will not be able to fill all the gaps.
You know, what might be helpful is even a listing to the committee members of where those projects are.
I think
some of us, in terms of if there are any of our districts or other legislators, we might get them to speak up and try to have an influence on that. Especially since I think I heard you say in the beginning that you think Congress is considering the HERA bill to be the housing part of the stimulus package already, and with all of its failings, it seems like, or lack of being able to be used, that's kind of bad news for those of us who are really concerned about housing if there's not going to be that much, or that's diminishing the kind of investment that there'll be in the stimulus package. So I think we need to all be voices for to make sure we don't see a lack of investment there. Okay. If there's no more comments or questions, let's go on then. Thank you. Okay, we're going to hit from the League of Cities. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Actually, I think Mr. Ranieri was going to...
Oh, and the city of Minneapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Gene Ranieri. I represent the City of Minneapolis as its IGR Director of Intergovernmental Relations. So I think there were two questions that were raised that I will try to answer. One was, how much money is there for the lead abatement program? In both the House and the Senate, it looks like the appropriation is $100 million. It would be a competitive grant. And I think the House has some money set aside for high abatement areas or high lead areas throughout the country. So it's a competitive grant, $100 million to HUD. Mm-hmm. The second question, I think, was about timing. In most, and I do have a handout that I can give when I give my presentation. Timing about when are these projects to be started. Most of the programs that we talked about in housing are subject to a little bit longer time. Once the bill is passed and appropriations are made, home program, NSP, things of that nature, have up to a year to expend 50% of their funds, 2 years to expend 100% of their funds. Other programs are much shorter, but the capital programs, particularly those in the Housing and Urban Development Department, are a year to 2 years, because it takes time to put a project together, get other funding. So it is quick. It's a little bit quicker than the traditional time, but it's a little bit longer than most of the other programs that are in this package.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wayne Lynn with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on the proposed federal stimulus package as it relates to housing. The League of Minnesota Cities serves more than 800 member cities. While the League focuses primarily on state legislative issues, we also advocate on federal issues directly and through our partner organization, the National League of Cities. The League, along with the National League of Cities, supports efforts to invest in programs that stabilize and enhance communities while helping communities minimize the damages caused by the foreclosure crisis, prevent loss of affordable housing stock by funding and rehabilitating abandoned and vacant properties, and include cities as full partners in helping stimulate our economy. In December, the League sent our congressional delegation a letter endorsing the outlines of a potential stimulus package, and I believe the members of the committee should have the letter. Specifically, we requested that the stimulus package include the following: support to individuals, city access to financial markets, and infrastructure investments, with funds that go directly to cities for shovel-ready projects and put people back to work. We also surveyed our members regarding potential infrastructure projects that could be ready to bid within 120 days. We had 259 cities, or about a third of our members, submit a total of 924 projects totaling over $1.8 billion. Members of the committee should also have a handout on just the housing projects that were submitted. I would like to indicate that this is by no means a comprehensive list. It was what was volunteered to the League of Cities per our request. I would also like to stress how preliminary our knowledge of the stimulus package is. It does appear that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, as proposed by the House and Senate, include the economic recovery priorities highlighted in the League's letter. Funds included in the proposal, which will help local governments, include additional money for community development block grants, money for the home program, which will help with ready-to-go housing projects, and additional funds for the neighborhood stabilization program. Minnesota received a total of $58 million in the first round of NSP funding, which made it possible for local governments to address vacant and foreclosed properties. We are also hopeful that a second round of funding will help cities build on the recovery efforts. Given the recent cuts to LGA and the magnitude of the crisis, we are working with cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, Metro Cities, and Minnesota Solutions, and proposing legislation to address community recovery through policy and funding requests in hopes of maximizing federal funds and allow for flexibility in pre-existing programs. As mentioned last week, we are looking at reviving a dormant targeted neighborhood revitalization program. The intent of the legislation is to fund very specific targeted program dollars at our most devastated neighborhoods. The dollars previously were used for construction, reconstruction, alteration, and repair of buildings, provide energy assistance loans and grants, and relocation or acquisition of real property. Our proposal would expand the program statewide and help communities most devastated by the foreclosure crisis. This bill would require funding to leverage the NSP dollars already received and possibly to come. We are also seeking flexibility in the uses of financing tools already available to cities, such as tax increment financing to address foreclosed and vacant properties, to address affordable housing as well as market rate housing. We are also looking to changes that will allow cities to preserve our housing stock and ensure tenants are living in safe and well-maintained communities. The housing crisis has resulted in an unprecedented number of vacant properties, making them a top concern for communities. Left unaddressed, these abandoned and blighted properties destabilize neighborhoods, depress property values, and drive up the cost of municipal services. Although cities are doing their best to preserve the vitality and safety of their communities, it is evident that they cannot address these issues alone. We look forward to working with the state and federal government to stabilize our communities. And with that, I'll open for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wynn. Any questions? Okay. Just stay there because we'll be coming up as we hear from Mr. Inouye.
Madam Chair, I have a handout that tries to summarize the first article of the House bill as it was introduced, the stimulus bill. It's basically the rules of the game that we need to follow in trying to implement this act, and I can have it distributed if that's okay.
Great. That'd be great. Thank you.
Right. Thank you so much. And it's... But before, a couple of remarks before copies are distributed. The stimulus package is basically two parts, as I think been stated earlier. Tax ideas, tax concepts, tax relief, tax credits, but also an appropriation. The stimulus package bill in front of the House and to be introduced by the Senate is an appropriations bill. Just like we do here in Minnesota, and it has riders, they call them provided clauses or provided further clauses, that has a little bit of policy in it. This is basically an appropriation bill, and unlike here where we try to keep to targets like housing and health, this is an omnibus bill. This covers every branch of federal government, including science, justice, and commerce. So when you go through this bill, you see almost many programs being funded or being created. There's a couple new ones, too, in this bill. But in going through the outline quickly, one of the first things that struck me was there's a statement of purpose. There are five purposes for the stimulus. Obviously, to create jobs and retain jobs. And that's being done, when you look through the bill, there's an awful lot of money for workforce. There's money for green job training out of the Department of Labor. Again, many of these programs have been passed or not funded or are currently being funded. To assist those impacted by the recession, there is money for extension of food stamps. There is a proposal to also increase funding for Medicare, Medicaid. So there are many job training again. Investments needed to increase efficiency by spurring technological advances. In the science portion of the bill, there's a lot of money to study energy efficiency, specific appropriations for battery technology, specific appropriations for solar technology. A lot of National Science Foundation, a lot of money for NASA. So an awful lot of people being assisted here in this bill. Transportation and environmental infrastructure. I think that was the initial start of the whole stimulus, was to try and jumpstart the economy by trying to invest in infrastructure, roads and bridges. That's still in the bill. There's additional money for transit. Many people are not happy that the transit amount is not as strong as it should be, but there is, I think, about $10 billion for transit. We're looking through the bill. We don't think there's any money for operating. I know initially there was a proposal to do that. In terms of stabilized state and local government, there's some proposals to help with state stabilization, some dollars to help you with some of your costs in Medicare and Medicaid. Also, I think there's some money in there to help with some educational issues for the state. But now the funds are to be used quickly. Under B, most activities should start within 120 days of the enactment, and 50% of the funds should be obligated. So if you've received a grant for a job training program, you should be getting it up pretty quickly. The whole idea is to get folks to work and to get started quickly. Again, you're trying not to fill budget gaps, but to maximize job creation and economic benefits. And then there are timelines. And now some of the programs that have been talked about in the bill, that are in the bill that we talked about today, can be categorized. Formula grants. The Public Housing Capital Fund is a formula grant. HUD has a formula. Money is appropriated, allocated to agencies around the country to do capital improvements to the public housing. They're exempted from the rule. They are basically allowed 1 year to spend 50% of the money and 2 years to spend it all. Other formula grants, it's 30 days after enactment or 30 days after appropriation. So the burn grants that are used for police and public safety, they would be an example where those dollars could get out quick, within 30 days of enactment or 30 days of appropriation. Competitive grants. NSP will now be a competitive grant. The Neighborhood Stabilization Program in the first round was a formula grant. Monies were allocated by formula to cities and states. It is now a competition. It will be a competitive grant, and it will be determined within 90 days after enactment. That's the House language. I think the Senate may be a little bit more generous in time.
Just a question about that. Does that mean going forward now? So the existing money that's already here from the first $58 million, that's continuing.
That's a very good point. All this is specifically to the stimulus package that we have now is governed by the rules we are now operating under. This would be just for the new money.
Okay, thank you.
Then there are new programs, and there are a couple. There's a broadband and a wireless program that will be new. It's a grant program that will be implemented through this act. Then there's rules about use it or lose it. I think we've talked about that. Last date to obligate your funds are by 2010. And then, there are some things you can't spend money on. Casinos or gambling establishments, aquariums, zoos, golf courses, or swimming pools. There are lots of lists generated during the discussion of these bills, and I think this list may be a result of looking at that list. Then, of course, there's some things that we are all going to be responsible to do. There's lots of transparency and oversight. The federal government's going to have a board of review. There's going to be a person responsible for making sure the stimulus works the way it's supposed to work. The feds are going to have their spending plans and grant information on the website. There'll be an awful lot of use of the computer and websites on information. The governor will have to do a lot of confirmations and certifications about grant programs, making sure they've been vetted, making sure they've been complying to rules and civil local governments. We will have to publish anything we receive part of this program on a website detailing who the contact persons are, what the money is being spent for, and the purpose of the funds. That's right in the first act of the House. I have not been able to review the Senate, so I don't know what's in the Senate. But there seems to be an attempt to have transparency and to use the Internet. The city of Minneapolis has been fairly active in this whole process. We're not, like everyone else, we've talked to our congressional folks, Mr. Ellison and Senator Klobuchar. We've also been able to talk through our national associations with folks in the administration and in the state departments. We also retain two law firms in Washington, D.C., and they've been very active and helpful with us in helping to shape some of the language. Right now, we're attempting to see if there could be some movement in the Senate to put in a community development block grant appropriation. There's one in the House, but not in the Senate. We're concerned about making sure these funds get out, so we have been pretty active. Our mayor's been to Washington. We have done letters. We've been to many, many discussions, and have a very good response back from our congressional delegation. Madam Chair, the city is, poised and ready to go with these projects. We do public works. We work with our public housing agency. We hope to work on NSP and build on our NSP things. But the biggest problem is we don't know what the rules are yet. The House and the Senate seem to be a little different. Hopefully, within the next 3 weeks, we'll know what the set of rules are and how would it go forward. With that, I'll stop and try and answer any questions.
Okay, any questions from committee members? Well, I have a couple. I think earlier, Sadek was talking about, as well, the original intent of the first $750 billion, I believe it is, to try to reach the actual families who are in foreclosure. It hasn't worked. And as we're talking with either through the biggest cities or our own cities or the other jurisdictions, how is that going in terms of actually some sort of effort to really get that money, get those financial institutions to actually do something other than sit on it or buy other banks, buy each other up or whatever else they've been doing recently? Do you have some hope for us with that? When I listen to the news, it's pretty discouraging. I think they even got some of the money. They even talked about maybe helping one pharmaceutical agency buy another one, a company buy another one. That money was supposed to go to mortgages, and I'm just trying to understand. And I probably should have asked Mr. Hallbeck this question too. But do you see in the accountability that's being talked about for the current legislation and the city League of Cities, you're getting a pretty big voice, the League of Cities at the national level? Are we getting anywhere with this?
Madam Chair, I think Congressman Barney Frank is having hearings on that issue. He's actually introduced a bill to make the next $750 billion more accountable. I'm not sure where that bill is. I think he had some hearings scheduled, I think for this week or last week. But there is some work being done in the House and the Senate on what to do with the next $750 billion. I know the White House also is concerned, but I've not seen anything pass yet. But Mr. Frank has been very vocal on this issue and very active, and Mr. Ellison is on that committee also. And we have been working closely with Mr. Ellison's office on that issue.
Okay, and I see heard earlier that Mr. Paulson is also on, and that's good. So we have two voices from Minnesota working with
us. Well, I think we have three. I think Ms. Bachman was also on it, too.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just interested to see, you know, if we actually get somewhere with that, and I think we should have a big announcement or something if that actually happens. Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the question would be to either of you. I heard you speak, Mr. Renner, about broadband. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you think might be meant by that?
That was an interesting, Madam Chair. There seems to be, I think it's in the commerce section of the stimulus package, a grant program to help broadband and wireless. And as I talk to folks, it seemed to be really focusing to help folks in rural parts of the country access it. I am not in detail, I don't know the details, but we can get them to you. But I was struck when I read that and saw that, yes.
And I would echo that too. Ms. Ann Higgins from the League of Minnesota Cities does work on broadband issues, and I know that she has been working to look at the legislation. And we also have proposals similar to the housing proposals on broadband and stuff, shovel-ready projects that we've sent to our delegation. So we can get more information for you on that.
Madam Chair, one thing I should be remiss. You know, we've talked about the housing programs in the housing section of this bill, but there are also in the energy section, there's some grant programs to help people retrofit for more green for housing, rent for residential housing, also for public buildings, both federal and state and local. So there is some efforts there. The format of how it's going to occur is a little different in both the House and the Senate. That's going to have to be resolved. But there seems to be some money in, being proposed to help with energy retrofitting both residential and public buildings, which in effect helps also get folks to work and helps with better housing.
I was looking at the Ready to Go projects that are listed. I see Minneapolis doesn't have their list on here yet, so maybe we could remedy that. But I did notice in that regard, St. Paul has one called Growing St. Paul Jobs in the Economy. And if I understood the earlier testimony, this is one part of the proposal that has to have a very quick investment. Is that right? Like this 120-day rule, or is that a different part of it? And well, that's the first question.
Madam Chair, on the St. Paul question, I think someone's here from the city. On the issue about workforce and amount, I can answer that now after
okay.
Ms.
Sure.
Underwood.
Okay.
I guess we're going to have to get to an answer, Madam
Chair. Just do the best you can. Do you want to address the committee? Welcome to the committee. If you just introduce yourself,
thank
please.
Thank you. Wendy Underwood with the City of St. Paul. Mm-hmm. I very much appreciate the question. I cannot answer it, but I'll be more than happy to inform the committee on the greater details of that project.
Actually, while you're there, can I just give you an additional assignment then, too, to come back
sure.
with some information? One of the things I'm very interested in, and there's certainly a number of organizations that have been meeting to talk about how the communities that are most impacted by foreclosures in the Twin Cities area have, and it's not just limited, of course, but there have been so far a lot of problems in our inner city communities. And some of the ideas for job training that I am familiar with is trying to make sure that some of our inner city residents actually have a shot at getting some of that job training so they can help fix up communities in their own neighborhoods. And I think as we see more foreclosures in the suburbs, and as has been predicted, and more what's already happening in rural Minnesota, that'll be important too, that there's some local folks who get to have that kind of job training. But, you know, historically, at least in the construction trades, we've had a small representation of some of our inner city folks, particularly women and people of color. So I'm just wondering, when you bring back information, or if you care to respond today, in terms of that particular project in St. Paul, growing St. Paul jobs or others, is there going to be some effort to really make sure that the green jobs actually are
opportunity of job training is available to those folks who most are right now kind of excluded from those industries?
Madam Chair, I can speak specifically to St. Paul and Ramsey County. We share our workforce investment board, St. Paul Ramsey County, and we have added to our top five priorities, specifically green job training in all of the areas, construction, on mechanical work, and healthcare, adding to that the significance of emerging technologies and particularly green technologies. So it is being managed by our Workforce Investment Board to include that element in all the job training efforts so that they are, and all those resources are used in our inner city and for employment job training. So we have made it a focus in St. Paul, Ramsey County.
And I would like to speak to the League of Minnesota has actually highlighted energy efficiency and sustainability as one of our top priorities this legislative session. Sustainability in rehabbing the homes and green jobs and following the green economy. I know there have been cities who with limited resources are getting pretty creative in rehabbing homes. I think they've worked with Habitat for Humanity and a couple of other youth programs to help rehab the houses or help maintain the properties and stuff like that.
I think you might be referring to one of my favorite organizations, Youth Build Program.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah, and that is a program that community members aren't familiar that high school youth who are mostly dropouts are working with building trade folks to do some of this kind of construction. And I do hope that, you know, it's a pre-apprenticeship project, and I do hope some of the apprenticeship types that should be happening here will go forward. I guess one of the other questions to ask in that regard is, I don't know if there's any criteria in the federal stimulus package, but some of these jobs, as they are created and dealing with retrofitting, are going to be dealing with homes that have hazards in them. For example, if someone were to come in and look at my old 100-year house and try to do some rehabbing for energy assistance, which it needs, they would be dealing with asbestos. They would be dealing actually with lead, and they just cleaned up the arsenic, so that's not on the ground anymore. But there are, you know, those kinds of issues. And I'm just thinking, is that addressed at all in the federal law? Do you know? Or if not, is it something we could bring up that the League of Cities and others might become a voice to raise at the federal level?
Madam Chair, in the stimulus package is basically an appropriation, so I do not see any addressing of those policies. I would assume in the programs that are going to be funded by the stimulus and their enabling legislation, there may be information. We can get that to you. We'll look at and get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions from community members? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very, very much. Keep us informed. And then our last witness is Colleen Marty from Hunger Solutions. Actually, we might have one more person after Colleen, I believe. Michael Dahl, I believe, if we have time. So, Hunger Solutions. What's happening with the federal level? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Colleen Moriarty. I'm the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. And with me is Mary Pat Ramonde, who is the Associate Program Director in Health and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. I did distribute or make available to you before the committee meeting a handout, and I'm basically going to go over the handout, and then I'm going to provide additional information about what I currently know as of 10 minutes ago about the stimulus package as it's taking shape, both as it marches through the Congress and the Senate.
Thank you.
I thought it might be appropriate at this point to give you a recent snapshot of what hunger looks like in the state of Minnesota. As you know, last year you made an emergency appropriation of $500,000 for food shelters in the state of Minnesota. And as you can imagine, given the current state of the economy, the outlook has not greatly improved for residents in the state of Minnesota needing assistance. 9.5 residents of Minnesota, citizens of Minnesota, are food insecure. That's up. And last year, over 2 million visits to the state's 300 food shelves took place. As recently as just coming into the committee hearing, one of our providers gave me additional information. It looks like right now we're looking at about 14% increase in the metro area and 20 to 24% increase in the greater Minnesota. In Anoka, suburban Hennepin, in Anoka County, I just received a message that their October, November, and December stats were up 23%. The reason for that is obvious. The economy is crashing. People who are out of work, people who have never anticipated arriving in this situation are at the point where they need the emergency food system even more. This at a time when the resources really haven't expanded. The one thing that we can count on is that the generosity of the citizens of Minnesota is stable. Even people who have very little to share are sharing, but it simply is not enough to meet the needs. Included in your packet, you'll see remarks from food shelf providers throughout the state of Minnesota who benefited from the appropriation last year, and a brief update on what the statistics look like. Included in the stimulus package are four main avenues which they're using to address hunger. But really, the food support program remains the cornerstone of how this country addresses nutrition. We certainly had a lot of discussion about that during the discussions for the Farm Bill last year. Minnesota currently enrolls 69% of eligible participants in the food support program. Full participation in the program, as it currently stands without the stimulus package, would yield an additional $394 million in federal assistance that will be available to the state of Minnesota. That is for $5 in food support benefits, results in $9.20 in local spending that would benefit the local economy. And that is really why the extension of unemployment benefits in the food support program is looked at as a way to stimulate the economy on a rapid pace, because it's actual money that can be spent on the front line at the grocery stores in every town in the state of Minnesota. As I said, the food support program is the cornerstone. It's now known as the SNAP program, so if I go in and out of language, just so you're aware of the federal name change that happened after the Farm Bill. It is the cornerstone of the nation's nutrition security safety net. But the full benefits, even through the food support program, fall $63 below the Thrifty Food Plan. And the Thrifty Food Plan is really, what does it take to provide the basics of a nutritional diet? And when I talk about food insecure, it means people who really don't know where their next meal is coming from. As I said, the food support program is really looked at as a way to provide stimulus to the people who need it so greatly within our nation. And we are in the process of trying to do everything we can to make the food support program work better for citizens within the state of Minnesota. Just last week, we participated in advocating for a waiver that was granted for 11,000 unemployed childless adults to receive an extension, and that really matches their unemployment extension. There are four main parts of the stimulus bill as it moves through the House. The first one is $20 billion for the food support program. Of that $20 billion, and now on the Senate side, it looked like, before I came to the hearing this morning, it looked like about $16.5 billion for the food support program on the Senate side. If I break that down to the state of Minnesota, as it stood in the House bill, that would be, of the 306,000 participants in the food support program in the state of Minnesota, it would need $175 million additional dollars to the state of Minnesota, and $3.1 million available to the state of Minnesota to aid in delivering that service. And that would be, it's my understanding in the Senate side, a direct grant to the state agencies that are delivering the services. And as you know, those services in the state of Minnesota are delivered through OEO and the Department of Human Services in various, the OEO is one part of it. There are other programs within the state of Minnesota, DHS, who work on food stamps, and then the actual county delivering of the services. At 69%, though, we're not at full enrollment for this program, and I've already expounded on the benefits of that, as it would be to all the economies in the state of Minnesota. So we're very interested in participating in an active, robust outreach to people who could be enrolled in this program. The second part of the stimulus package, as it stands now, is a senior nutrition program. $200 million for formula grants to states for elderly nutrition services, including Meals on Wheels and congregate dining. And that's really why I've asked Mary Pat to join us this morning. Briefly, I'd like her to just give you an update on how the seniors in our community are faring under this pressure. Because I think that in many cases, we've come forward and talked about children and families, and they certainly are major recipients of the program, but we really haven't focused as greatly on seniors, and I thought Mary Pat could give you some of those, that kind of data that will give you a greater understanding of how seniors are faring under this great economic crisis. Mary Pat.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members, for allowing me to offer some insight into this stimulus package. I am Mary Pat Raimondi. I'm a registered dietitian, and I work at the University of Minnesota as an associate program director in health and nutrition. But in my volunteer time, I'm a board member of Hunger Solutions, and I'm also on the National Association of Nutrition and Aging Services Program Board, which is congregate and home-delivered meals. Even with the current census data getting close to being revised, and that will include some information about the stressed economy, we know that the poverty level for persons from 65 to 74 compared to those over 74 doubles. So here's some information that will be used in consideration to keep this money in the bill. The $200 million is in the House bill. It is not in the Senate bill. So why is this money a good investment? The simple answer is it offers cost savings and improved quality of life. Older adults have a higher rate of chronic diseases, nutrition deficiencies, gastrointestinal problems, and are prone to more costly and deadly infections. This has been evidenced by the deaths of three Minnesotans who have consumed peanut butter in our state. Poor dietary intake can also exacerbate these problems with more costly hospitalizations and early mortality. 7 out of the top 10 diseases in this country have a direct relationship with nutrition, and older Minnesotans are more vulnerable to these problems. In our older population, poor vitamin intake, which is, I hope you're all taking because it's the new hot vitamin that we know everyone in Minnesota can't get enough of from October to March, but it's shown to be associated with the increased reoccurrence of falls. Minnesota is number 3 in the country for falls and fatality.
Excuse me, I don't think you said which vitamin you're talking about. Did you say vitamin D?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you say which vitamin?
Vitamin D?
Yeah, I didn't know if you said it. Maybe I missed it.
Vitamin D.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. So make sure we get that on the record.
Yep. So I don't want anyone's phone breaking. The IOM report also included that maintaining health and nutrition in the elderly, if we would have enough vitamin D and calcium in our diets for this population, we would save $8 billion a year in hip fractures. We know that older people who routinely eat nutritious food and drink adequate amounts of fluid are not in the hospital as much. So why earmark this money for congregate and home-delivered meals? Well, between 80 and 90% of the participants in this program have incomes below 200% of the poverty level. More than twice as many Title III, which refers to congregates and home-delivered meals, live alone compared to the overall population. They have twice as many physical impairments with the overall population. But when they are participants, they have a higher daily intake of key nutrients that provide what they need, approximately 50% of their daily requirements, and they have more social contact. In a recent survey here done in Minnesota with participants, they self-reported about the effectiveness of the program. Nearly 80% of those participating in congregate programs are able to live at home because of the program. 90% of those receiving home-delivered meals would not be able to live in their homes without the program. So why is this money needed? Well, we know it's going to offset the rising food costs that cause havoc for our older Minnesotans and also for the programs that feed them. Older Minnesotans are too feeling the effects of the declining income, and so there's less money for food. Their limited budgets are stretched even further as they try to pay for health care costs. Older consumers with the lowest income struggle the most to pay their utility bills. 35% of our older households have incomes of less than $20,000 and experience the greatest energy burden. So what do we say? This was what we call food or fuel. This is what they choose. So how would we use this money? Well, we're going to continue in Minnesota to serve the most vulnerable, which is what that program does right now, which is the old, and the frail, a population which is growing. We're going to reach out to target others who need these services, which is the isolated and the growing poor. We're going to make the connection for participants on healthy eating through innovative, well-received nutrition education programs, including the Food Stamp Nutrition Education Collaboration. And we're going to recruit and retain volunteers to deliver meals, which really has declined. Once gas prices went up, that pool really went down.
And finally, we're going to make the approaches, challenges of baby boomers, because, you know, the first baby boomer is now getting Social Security, and we need to be prepared for that. So this money would be used to keep older Minnesotans healthy and in their homes. Thank you.
In conclusion,
the other two major elements of the stimulus package as it stands now is $726 million to increase the number of states that provide free dinners to children or free snacks and to encourage participation, and the $100 million for the state management information systems for the WIC program. On the Senate side, there also is an additional appropriation that suggested the food bank. I just want to say that I think that it's not astonishing to any of us who work in the field of hunger why it is that that President Obama would move forward on recognizing the fact that nutrition is such an important element of keeping our citizenry healthy and functioning and ready to participate in the workplace. And I don't think it will come as a surprise to you that the $500,000 appropriation that was made to the state of Minnesota for the food shelf last year is something that we'll be seeking again this year, considering the fact that we're having these kinds of dramatic increases at the food shelf in the state of Minnesota. I stand ready for your questions.
Questions from committee members? We will be dealing with that issue in this committee, so I thank you for coming forward with it. One of the interrelated parts, I guess, of the stimulus package that I think of when we talk about nutrition is the issue of transportation. A lot of our seniors in particular are having the need to get to a place where they can buy food or even to the congregate dining.
Right.
And I think that's just an issue that I'm not sure, again, things are in silos and if they're being addressed, but I can think of it in the case of my own dad, who lives in a tiny little town, and the congregate dining is located about 13 miles away.
Absolutely.
And at 92, with snowy roads and other things, it's pretty hard for them to get there. I'm just thinking that there's those kinds of issues that I don't know if they're being put together when people are talking about them in the stimulus package, but I hope they're
there. Madam Chair, members of the committee, currently there isn't a discussion about how transportation works, but, you know, one of the benefits of working with TAP agencies throughout the state and other programs is that they're aware of other kinds of public programs that are available, and really that's all of the work that we can do to coordinate outreach the better for the citizens. You know, every time that you apply for public benefits in one program, you should be made aware of everything, whether it's free lunch or school breakfast or Minnesota Care or any other public benefit that you might be available for. But that's really, to me, that's one of the beauties of that kind of coordinated service effort. But I'll do some research, Representative Clark, and find out what I can about transportation.
Thank you.
And I can also add to that, if I could, that the Minnesota Board on Aging has convened a senior nutrition task force and to look at how they're going to provide services in the future. And transportation is one that is certainly being addressed. And on the national level, USDA is going to fund, as a result of the Farm Bill, research on food deserts. So we know we have certain food deserts in the city. The University of Minnesota has done a lot of research. But the issue is, now we know we have the food deserts, what are we going to do about it to address that very issue?
Absolutely.
Thank you. And one of the other issues in that whole regard is the issue of fresh food, fresh quality food. Some of our food deserts, as you speak about, there may be some food available, but it may not be of very high quality and is more expensive. Anyway. Okay, committee members, we're out of time today, and Mr. Dell, we'll invite you back soon, and we need to have the minutes approved. Oh, I see. Okay, we have a small amendment to our minutes of last week, but to my attention that we have Representative Benson down twice. We'll remove it and just make sure that he is excused. And by the way, many members who don't know, we are, as a committee, going to send a card to our colleague who's still in the hospital, Mercy Hospital, and if you'd like to sign that, we'll please see Jake. Okay, so Representative Rosenthal, do you want to move the minutes, if you have as corrected?
We'll move.
Okay, so Representative Rosenthal moves that the minutes of our second session on January 21st be approved as corrected. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved and adopted. Thank you so much, committee members. We'll see you tomorrow.